This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Is this just a situation where you're going to cut a bunch of our blurbs out of context?
No, because then there would be blisters in awkward places, which would be terrible.
Oh, here we go. That is the dirtiest thing I've ever seen.
Listen to The Nerd with Adam, Will, and Amanda.
Why did I get top billing? I don't deserve top billing.
Because out of the two of us, you're the one she likes better.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm 8 months pregnant. Put another one in me.
And that's when she figured out that I had taken drugs.
How are all of you? We're going to do a promo, but we're just going to talk sex.
I got to see your dick.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
She cooked dinner for me in lingerie, which hopefully she doesn't listen to this. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
This podcast phenomenon is sweeping the nation, and we're all up on the bandwagon with the plethora of episodes at nerd.pantspending.com.
Willem Dafoe gives me a lady boner.
Blue Chew is bullshit, by the way.
Listen to The Nerd. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you. Is that a good no? It takes effort to do a promo.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that before.
Although I feel like we could just put that part in.
Yeah.
That along with the nerdy thing Adam said and me with the sexy voice. There you go. There's your promo, Will. Congratulations.
The Nerd. I'm sorry.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Oh, listen, I need to show you guys this, and it feels creepy.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington. This is The Social Hour. On today's show, co-founder of the art collective Terrain, Ginger Ewing. And now your host. For Halloween, he decided he's going to dress up as someone who's actually employed. Deese Casillas.
Malib Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for coming around for another episode. Guys, I'm excited for this show. Ginger Ewing from the art collective Terrain is on. We're going to be talking to her in just a second. I am very excited to talk to her. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while. She's someone who we've been in each other's orbit in weird ways, like in the community, but never actually met. I don't think we decided on. But I know a lot about her, and I've been looking forward to this interview. She's an important person in our community for a lot of reasons, and you're going to find out why during this interview. So please stick around and take a listen. It was very, very inspiring and interesting, and I hope to do it again soon. Get down and sit down with her a little bit longer even. But guys, real quickly before we get into it with Ginger, for me, I need you to go to deesecomedy.com/calendar. Check out the dates. They're coming up. There's some live ones. There's some podcasts. There's the Social Minute. And announcement, not full announcement yet. You'll be getting a full press release from my agent, a.k.a. me, soon. But I've got a new show coming, guys. Not just me and some peeps that you're going to love. I love them. You're going to love them. You've heard them before on this show. You're going to hear them with me soon, and you're going to hear me with them. It's going to be pretty great. It's an interesting thing. It's new. It's different than anything I've ever done before. It's different than this show. It's going to come out soon, and we'll be releasing details very soon. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for that. I'm excited about it, though, and it's going to, you know, something that's going to be helpful for you guys, and hopefully you'll participate in. So It's exciting. Just know it's exciting, and there is a page for it on the website already if you want a sneak preview and see things as we progress. But I can say this, November 4th, you're going to see a brand new show on this website. It's going to be coming out every other week, and more details to come. All right. Also, watch the Social Minute, all that stuff, guys. Do all those things. Also, you can donate or subscribe at Deese Comedy. There's a donate button down in the bottom right-hand corner. All this content we give you for free. But we do appreciate any love you want to kick us, man. A couple ducats. Help me buy a burger, homie. Kick in. It's up. Whatever you want to do, hit subscribe. Kick in a dollar a month. $2. Don't be cheap. Whatever. Or one-time donation, $5. That's it. And whatever you want to do, you can also hit me at Deese-Casillas on Venmo. All those things are appreciated. Live stand-up's dead. Comedy's not dead, though. We're still bringing it to you in ways in addition to this show, which does have comedy on it. It's still funny and informative. It's got so much going on. We're going to bring you so much stuff. But right now, I'm going to bring you my guest. Please welcome Ginger Ewing, everyone. All right, I'm here with my guest this week, Ginger Ewing. Ginger is one of the co-founders of Terrain, a art collective here in Spokane, among other things, as well as sits on the commission for the Washington State Art Commission and Spokane Art Commission, among many other things that she does. Ginger, thanks for coming and being here today. I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I have followed the podcast some. I was just listening to it this morning, and it's an absolute pleasure to be a guest on this show.
Oh, so thank you. Well, thanks for listening. I appreciate that. Which episode were you? Who were you listening to?
It was, who was it? I just had it kind of playing in the background. It was the latest episode, I believe.
Oh, I think that might have been John Ward. Was that John Ward, musician? I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, it's thank you. I appreciate when anyone listens. I really I started this podcast as a way to promote Spokane and local artists and events and things going on, but has progressed to much more than that. But I've really it's just my love of kind of talking to people and getting to know people and talking about the things that they do in their passions. And I've known about you for quite some time. I'm trying to rack my brain. I don't know if we've ever actually met in person or not. We know a lot of the same people and have been a lot of the same events, I'm sure, but I don't know.
Glad you're having similar conversations in your head, because I was doing the exact same thing too. And it sounds a little cyber stalky, but yeah. I was like going on doing a little research about you as well. And I don't think we've actually met in person. Although, like I said, you know, just a second ago, I am familiar with your work.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate you. You being familiar and still being willing to do this. Then that's fantastic. But no, it's good to actually finally, assuming we haven't actually met, be able to talk to you. And like I said, I know a lot. I know some about you and kind of what you do. Some broad strokes, more of the details of what I'd like to talk to about you with you today. You're from Spokane originally, or Cheney, is that correct?
Yep, absolutely. I grew up in Cheney, went to Cheney High School, did the 16-mile trek into Spokane, went to Whitworth.
All right.
Back when it was college. I'm dating myself.
Yeah.
Had been in the region, you know, pretty much my whole life.
Yeah. So you really, I mean, you're very embedded in the area and kind of committed to this region and really the art scene here. So you've really been a long time, you know, kind of goal to keep building it. I take it.
Yeah, you know, my journey towards kind of the art and creative community is relatively a long one. I actually thought I was going to be a forensic anthropologist growing up, and that's what my schooling is for. Kind of long story short, found myself at the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture. I was the curator for cultural literacy there for about 7 years.
Oh, wow.
And it was really there where my love for and better understanding of the creative community was really ignited. I was there. My now husband was an arts editor at the Inlander. Patrick Kendrick was probably the largest music independent booker here in town at the time.
Yeah.
And a couple of our other founders started to kind of coalesce and start talking more deeply about the creative community here in Spokane. But like I said, I grew up on Unsolved Mysteries, Robert Stack, and so I had no idea this is what my life would look like.
I mean, isn't that kind of, you kind of never expect, you know, when you're a kid, you have different ideas and then things grow and you have to be, unfortunately, kind of be a little more practical, but also you find that you develop, you figure out what you're good at, your passions grow. Although, you know, the original Unsolved Mysteries is still on. It's on like Roku channel. I was watching it the other night.
That Forensic Files is a daily occurrence.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen every single episode of Unsolved Mysteries probably like 120 times.
Right. Yeah. I have this theory that actually Robert Stack is behind all of those Unsolved Mysteries. He's the criminal. And that's like, how do you know so much about this, Robert? How come you're so clued in on this and the rest of us don't know? You got a lot of details that the cops don't have for some reason. I think he was just looking to get caught. And then he's just so.
Have you been watching the new Unsolved Mysteries?
I think I watched like the first one or two. I know I watched the first one, and then you know, it just wasn't the same without Robert Stack, I feel like, too.
In some ways, I loved it. I mean, there's no replacing Robert Stack, and I don't mean to like go down the rabbit hole.
No, that's okay.
I enjoyed the new one as well, but you kind of have to like change your filter and
for sure. I feel like I don't know exactly how old you are, but I'm pushing 38, and when I was a kid, there was still this allure that like maybe the Loch Ness Monster is real, you know. You're like, you know, now,
you're speaking my love language right now.
Yeah, you know, that was like, there was, you know, because we just had encyclopedias and vague pictures that you couldn't really quantify if they were real or not. Now we have the internet and everything's like, that crap's not real. And I'm like, so it kind of made Unsolved Mysteries kind of solvable, I guess.
Well, I am old enough to, I'm just going to say I'm a little older than you are.
Okay.
And when I was in college, when I was at Whitworth, they still had microfiche.
In
the library. Yeah.
Okay.
The internet had been invented, but.
Sure. I mean, it wasn't ubiquitous yet. It wasn't, no one was getting AOL discs quite yet. So, you know, it did take away from the allure of the, you know, the internet. There was always those, there was some show Robert Nimoy did that was kind of like Unsolved Mysteries, where it was just like, and the whole episode was building up to, is Sasquatch real? Find out tonight. And then the ending was just like, I don't know, you decide, whatever.
You decide, my husband, Luke, his uncle is like a legit Sasquatch hunter.
Yeah? Has he ever found one?
No, but I think that we don't know him super well, but, I think that he, feels like he has, Sasquatch sounds on recording.
Sure. Okay.
That they exist.
You know, I feel like anyone who hunts Sasquatch for a living is a real enigma. Nobody knows them real well. You can't risk getting hurt if you're a Sasquatch hunter. You've got too much on the line. So,
exactly.
The cryptozoology is one of my favorite things, but it's also it's one of the last mysteries where you're like, let me have a little whimsy left in life. Yeah. Everything else is too real, I think. So,
yeah.
So you grew up in, you've been here pretty much your whole life, you said, and you found your way into the arts. I'm really interested in terrain. Terrain's a thing that, you know, how long has that been around exactly?
Yeah, so we aren't doing our flagship event this year, sadly, because of a pandemic. That would have happened next Friday, and it would have been our 13th flagship event.
Yeah.
So about 12 and a half years. We've been doing terrain, and it's been, it's evolved into something that none of us anticipated. Truthfully, we thought we were going to have a one-time, one-night event 12 and a half years ago, and obviously it's evolved into something much bigger and deeper than that.
Yeah.
I
think I did comedy at one of the terrain events or something a couple years ago. I'm just having this memory of like, I think I did that actually. I was outside in this little dome thing outside of the. Okay. I that's I forget more than I remember, apparently. So about, you know, yeah, sadly this year, unfortunately, you're not able to do it. Is there thoughts of doing any type of virtual event or something to kind of at least keep it going?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we've, you know, so Terrain, like I said, started off as an annual event, and we now have a gallery space and a performing arts space and a retail storefront and a creative a professional development program, do a little bit of everything. And some of those have been able to translate to kind of a digital stage. And we just really couldn't find a way that we felt like would be a similar experience to the flagship event. It's just so multifaceted in terms of there's comedy, there's music, there's visual art, there's performance. And that was going to be really hard to do online. And so we just opted, we have a couple of ideas up our sleeves, not in terms of a replacement for the flagship event, but just how we can continue to engage and support the arts community as, you know, it's looking like this is going to be our situation well into 2021, if not 2022.
Right.
So how do we, you know, remain nimble? How do we pivot? How do we, what things can we put online? Can we go virtual? And then other ways to engage the community while we all kind of go through this.
Yeah. So. Have you found a good response from the art community, with the artists as well as the people trying to consume the art in those new pathways, you know, as you try to find those new pathways? Are people encouraging? Are people willing to, you know, pivot with you on those?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, one of the things that has been really clear for me and really clear for Terrain and why we exist pre-pandemic was just the transformational power of art and creativity. And we believe really strongly, I believe really strongly, that art and creativity are the heart and the soul of who we are as a community. They're the connective tissue of our humanity. And I think in moments like this, that light is intensified. It becomes even more clear the importance of these things in our life. And so it's been really interesting during the pandemic to see how that fits in. And I feel like art and creativity, comedy, music, have been a way to provide hope and a coping mechanism throughout the pandemic. And I think that people have been really receptive to it, because I really believe strongly that as holistic human beings, we crave and we need and we want that. That said, I think that it's different. And the only way that I can really describe it is, you know, you can read a book on a Kindle and then you have this physical, tangible experience, the smell of a book when you're reading a book. You know, and so there are some things that can be done incredibly well on the digital, in the digital realm, on a digital platform. And then there are some of that kind of just human connection and that synergy that takes place. I'm sure you're aware of, you know, if someone's in studio with you, you know, recording your podcast, and how that is different than, you know, behind the screen like we are right now, or, you know, in a comedy room, doing comedy to a screen versus doing comedy to a live room. It's a different experience, you
know?
And so, yeah, I do think that people have adapted and pivoted and are appreciative of what you can consume in the digital realm, but nothing's ever going to replace that, like, in-person, face-to-face experience.
Yeah, especially in arts, you know, not even just like, you know, I mean, comedy and music, things like that are happening live, and like, so that's all kind of a different thing altogether too. But even experiencing someone's art, it's not like they're painting it in front of you, but still seeing it live is percentages better than just viewing it online. There's texture, there's depth, the color saturation is different. In a situation like Terrain, you may have a chance to meet the artist and actually kind of talk about what their experience was painting it, or what the person's experience is consuming it, you know, and that becomes more personal, and really where the art kind of evolves and becomes more than just something someone put on a canvas or abstract. I mean, I don't want to limit this to just obviously painting. The arts, the Terrain kind of puts together is much more abstract than that at times, but, you know.
Yeah, but you're spot on, you know. It's multiple senses, and then it's the human, the emotional connection that can take place in a live or a person face to face, person to person, a face to face experience for sure. So yeah, I think generally, this is you know, our situation now, and there I have been witness to a lot of really beautiful things that have taken place online. But again, just cannot wait until we can all be together in a room again.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely makes a difference. And I think, it's so funny. And I mean, it's hard not to go down this, path, which can lead to so many other conversations, but in today's world, the way,
feel free to go there. I'm ready to go there.
Okay. The way things are so polarized, like people in, especially now with COVID and the election and politics and race relations, like people have kind of gone so far into either absolutely, I'm embracing this kind of, look, this is what we have. We just kind of have to pull together and we have to, I will consume this online and I will support this, or just this so far in the opposite direction of like, can't even get near it and have no concept of how to, evolve in this kind of new world order without a, and I don't mean that in a sinister way, although that's kind of happening too. but
in a sinister way.
Right. Yeah. In a sinister way. Exactly. Yeah. But, I found that some people really have gotten into being able to be like, okay, well, this is kind of the way it is right now. Hopefully we get back to some semblance of normal soon. But for now, this is what we have, and we have to kind of pull together and still support and do what we can and still be some semblance of a society,
Yeah, absolutely. And I tend to, I'm sure like many other folks, have a gamut of emotions.
Yeah.
At my best, trying to, what are the opportunities, for lack of a better term, what are the silver linings that that we can take from this particular situation right now? And once we get back to some sort of semblance of normalcy, be better and stronger for it. And I think those opportunities are starting to show themselves in some ways.
Yeah.
I think I'll give an example. I was, the Lucky You Lounge, is going to start a virtual music series.
Okay.
We were there. I was there. I was a guest last night recording. It'll air in October. And, so that is an example of something that Lucky You probably would have never done, or the
right.
Bartlett probably would have never done unless they were forced to be in this moment. But it is, an added layer, and a way to reach an audience. So for example, if you have small kids at home and can't go down to the Lucky You at, 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night
right.
to see a band, this virtual experience that they're kind of experimenting with will be an added layer of their programming from here on out. So how many more people can you reach, or how many more people can local musicians or artists be exposed to because of the digital platform as well? And that's the same with us as well, with some of our programmings. I think there will always now be a digital component. And we're seeing that. We just had an art auction. Sorry, I'm kind of all over the place.
No, it's okay. Yeah, I know.
But we just had an art auction that I wanted to cancel. I just did not think, to be quite transparent, that it was going to be worth it. I didn't know. We don't have experience doing art auctions in general, let alone online.
Sure.
But was pleasantly surprised of the success of that particular event, but even more so of who was buying artwork across the nation. And so in that moment, I started to realize, oh, okay, these local artists are being not only exposed to the Spokane region, but to, nationally and sometimes
yeah.
internationally. And so that's an added benefit. If we're really wanting to support and give our local artists a platform, but why wouldn't we implement that digital, component from here on out if we're seeing those sorts of results? So Deese, I don't even remember your actual question. I just kind of went down that rabbit hole. But
I think that answers it really well, because a lot of people during this time are stuck at home or at home more because either they're working from home or they don't have a job currently, or for a lot of different reasons. So more people have been, the consumer has been put online also much more in a different way. I mean, everyone's always been online every day, but now they can't go get entertainment live. So they are searching for it online. So if you can be flexible enough to get your art online in a way that they can still consume it, people are looking for it. And those people who are willing to kind of go that extra step, you know, like I always, in my industry, comedy, I saw so many of my peers and great comics have completely disappeared during this time. I mean, I don't see any presence from them. And it's really sad because I know at the, you know, as a creative person, you want to create and you want to be giving your audience something. And it's, I think creative people are more susceptible to, you know, really falling into deep kind of depression and emotional despair when you don't have the ability to create that way or offer anything to people. So being able to put that out there and giving those other artists those opportunities is really important, I think.
Yeah. And I think you're spot on insofar of for those people who are able right now, because again, to your point, you know, a lot of different people are hurting both emotionally and financially in this moment. But for those people who are able, they're looking for ways to support.
Right.
And if you give them that opportunity, I think that people will be pleasantly surprised of how many people are seeking for ways to give right now.
Yeah, I think that and that was kind of that touches back on kind of what I was saying about you know, a portion of the community realizing we need to come closer together right now as opposed to farther apart. And I've kept trying to remind people, and I've kind of made it a point to, although, you know, a lot of work has gone away for me, it's like, all right, well, I want to like once a week go down to a local restaurant and like have dinner, because that gives money to those servers and then they put it back into their community. And then, you know, that goes back into someone else's community. And eventually that person will come to my comedy show or something. You know, it's like, you know, don't go to Starbucks, go to a local coffee shop, like put money in our community and keep this local support system, you know, be a real community, you know, where it's all, it kind of becomes we all just support each other, and it becomes ubiquitous instead of a struggle for people. You know, if everyone just does a little bit, it goes a long way.
Absolutely. So I'd be remiss not to ask as an art administrator.
Yeah.
And as an artist yourself, I mean, you mentioned that a lot of your income and the ways that you generate revenue have gone away in this moment.
Sure.
What are ways that we can support you in this moment, better support you?
Well, I appreciate that question. In really my biggest thing is I'm trying to create a small movement, which I call Laughs, LAFFS, Like and Follow Friends Share. That's the hashtag I'm using, where I try to share someone's art every day under that hashtag, because I think at least sharing is super important. Social media is very powerful, and we have more people on social media. So if more artists shared other artists, whether it's, you know, art or music or comedy, just something they're doing, it exposes them to more people. Like you said, you know, on a bigger scale, and the connectivity of social media, you know, we all know people in other areas. So if I share something from this region, it touches base in other regions that people may never have access to.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'm still doing a lot online. I've got, you know, shows out of state, but, you know, I mean, really probably sharing the things I do is the biggest thing, getting more exposure. I've had a lot of retention rate with new, engagement with, the things I've been doing. And yeah, I found myself going online. I created a new, you know, weekly comedy news show I do every week. I started doing the podcast twice a week, instead of once. And, yeah. So, I mean, there's, you know, I've got a Patreon, I've got ways people can donate if they like what I, you know, this stuff content comes out for free, but if they like what I do, you can, you know, there's a subscription thing on my website and all that. So.
But. I love that. I mean, you're really talking about how do we continue to build an ecosystem in this moment, despite that. And it really, it takes collaboration, and it takes us sharing each other's work. And I love that. I'm definitely going to go seek that out and learn more about it.
Yeah. Sure. Well, good. Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. I'm really just, I mean, I kind of started a couple months ago. I try and do it once a day, and I encourage other people too. I don't know how many people are, but you know, if I can share it's a lot of comedy, but there is, you know, there's musicians, there's art, there's local brewers when they're doing events. And, you know, just I think that's important. That's all kind of part of our community and art itself. So, yeah,
absolutely. You know, I love it.
Yeah. So with how have you kind of been staying busy looking forward beyond this? I know it's kind of nebulous because nobody knows when it's going to end or how things will shake out or if things ever go back to normal. But, you know, obviously this is a good time to we have more time to work on things we wouldn't have been able to work on normally. And it sounds like you're staying busy and, you know, kind of throwing track out in front of you so you know as things do progress and hopefully get better. What does it look like down the road? I mean, you know, what are you doing to prepare for when this does come back for you guys?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think there's a couple of different things that are happening right now. So we I'm just a super transparent person.
You go for it, yeah.
So we are in, you know, we are facing the real, there is likely, well, I shouldn't say likelihood, train could go away in all of this. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, I ticked off all of the different things that we do now in addition to the flagship event. And we are going to, are subject to potentially lose $326,000 this year, just in 2020 alone.
Wow.
And let me, you know, 93% of our budget, our revenue, goes towards the direct support of artists. So it's not like we have hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars that we typically get from like corporate sponsorships or beer sales or whatever that happens that we then put back into supporting the infrastructure of local art, be it our flagship event or a retail storefront or paying the rent to our gallery space. And so we are losing hundreds of thousands of dollars right now, truthfully about $30,000 to $40,000 a month. And so a big part of my job right now is how do I keep the ship afloat, for lack of a better metaphor or description, and just scrambling to try to stopgap the hemorrhaging of money because of the cancellation of everything. That coupled with, okay, how do we also continue to serve our mission? So Terrain's programming last year alone put $532,000 directly back into the pockets of local creatives. So that's over $500,000.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And if we're not doing our programs and events that aren't going back into the artists and creative or artists and creatives who are really, really, really struggling in this moment,
sure.
right? So saving, how do I keep Terrain stores open? How do we continue to serve on our mission and do our best to get money into artists' pockets? And then also, how do we take a step back and say, okay, how do we pivot? What are new programs that we can do? What does this look like in the future? So it's been an incredibly, the only word that comes to mind, devastating time for us. Our organization. But again, the continual looking of like, okay, what is the opportunity in here? There must be some sort of opportunity. And then also, I think to your point earlier, there's all this other stuff that's going around, you know, social justice uprising and, you know, the election. And what is our role in that? We continue to kind of, you know, look internally and externally to get guidance of like, what does this look like? Not only as our, as Terrain, the organization, but just as us as individuals and being good humans in this community. So it's been a lot of quite simply just unknowns. I would describe Terrain as a community building organization, and art and creativity is our resources, our tools, the mechanism in which we do that. And I would hope that we would always, as a collective, be responsive to community needs. And so a lot of this kind of foretelling that you're describing is also paying attention to what's happening in the community and what artists and creatives say that they need in this moment, and then us trying to adapt. That was one of my questions to, you know, why I posed that question to you is like, what do you need in this moment? And so we can learn and we can grow and we can adapt and we can adjust to make sure we're serving out our mission.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, that that's all, you know, you touch on a couple really interesting things there. You know, like you said, you know, social justice, the election, things like that, which can make this time, which is already so, you know, kind of in limbo, nebulous of what's going to happen, even more challenging, because there's a lot of unknowns about what's going to happen and how that's going to affect everything, socially, politically, economically, which could continue us down a potentially worse path, or you know, there's just so much kind of. It's really a pretty wild time. I mean, you know, there's a lot of necessary things happening that, you know, are long overdue. It's almost, I hate to say this, like I love seeing a lot of things that are happening, you know, the pushback, but also it almost seems hopeless at times, which can be devastating too.
Yeah.
And it makes it difficult as artists to even move forward and feel like, you know, you don't know where the next step is going to be or what the, you know, the next issue to come up that could impede on just life in general.
Absolutely. You know, I am trying to kind of wrap my head around what's happening, all that is happening. I keep on saying in this moment, but all that is happening. There is, I would say that never in my lifetime have I felt more hope that the needle might change just a little bit,
yeah.
Just like a baby. I'm not expecting like a, you know, a huge revolution or anything, but the needle might, you know, move forward just a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm also very, like, I'm already preparing myself for disappointment. And I don't mean to sound pessimistic, but I think that change has been so slow coming,
yeah,
that an emotional roller coaster, get filled with like a tremendous amount of hope. And then I'm like, okay, don't get too excited. Right. And I think that's perfectly okay. And especially when you're dealing with, you know, one of the things that I just absolutely love about being in the role that I am in this community is just how empathetic and aware, and I'm being very general here, but most artists are.
Yeah.
There is a way of seeing the world that not like the average human does. And for me, my interpretation of that is just empathy.
Yeah.
And when you feel that deeply, it is, you're going to feel all of it, the good, the bad, the
right,
hopeful, the, you know, whatever. And what kind of continues to give me hope is that, you know, these sorts of conversations that you and I are having, and even though we're saying that it's hard not to get depressed or, you know, pessimistic, there's also like, we've always kind of returned to, okay, but what happens in the future, or what are we doing, or how are we adapting, or, you know, like, there are the people who, you know, are collectively wanting to come together. And it's, you know, again, I'm being very general, but it just, artists and creatives in general seem to go down that path and down that road. And that gives me a lot of hope in moments like this, even though my heart is protected.
Well, I think that's fair. You know, you said you're hopeful, but still don't try not to be too pessimistic. I think having a certain degree of, I'll say pragmatism, I think is really what I, not to put words in your mouth, but I think it feels like that's kind of what you're describing. I don't view that as pessimism. I view that as pragmatism, because, yeah, given experience and life and the, you know, patterns of the way things have gone in America, there's a reason you feel that way. There's a reason people feel that way, that, you know, you're hopeful, you want things to turn a certain direction, but you also kind of know how the wind blows in this country at times, and you just, yeah, kind of have to be like, all right, well, I can hope for the best and maybe we'll have these incremental moves, but you know, the big leaps that are needed, we're still a ways off on those. You know, we're still waiting, we're still trying, but at least it is moving, and hopefully in the right direction. I think it's interesting you touch on the art collective and the empathy and things like that. And it, what one of the things I've really been impressed with is I'm not from Spokane. I moved here about 10 years ago from LA, and I didn't actually move. It was funny. I didn't actually move to Spokane. I was here. I was driving through for a week. I stayed here for a weekend. I 10 years later, I'm still here.
And that is awesome. I love it.
So,
what? Yeah.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I was supposed to be in Portland. I'm a little late. But I found myself falling in love with this community, and the reason I stayed here is the people I met, and then as it progressed, I met more and more people, and I really kind of saw a large potential in this city, and like everything, the momentum and the build and the change has been incremental, and there's been peaks and valleys, but it's been really encouraging to see a lot the way people have come together in Spokane recently, and the art community especially, but other just in general, kind of wanting this progress and moving forward and kind of helping each other out. You see that really. Certainly there's detractors. We all know there's people against it, but it's been encouraging to see that. I mean, have you experienced that or feel like that's we have a good core here?
Absolutely. So a couple of different themes pre-pandemic and social uprising. One of the things that I loved about the Spokane community, and what I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I hear you describing is that there has been enough of a foundation laid that there's something to sink our teeth into in terms of creating and cultivating a creative community here. But it's not so yet defined that someone like you or someone like me or an organization like Terrain can't come in and have a really big voice and how we move forward.
Yeah.
And it has been nothing in my experience, but a collaborative, we need each other in order to grow and again, to cultivate this creative community that we know can exist here in Spokane. And so that has been a really exciting thing. I'm confident that if I was in Portland or Seattle or New York or LA, wherever it happened to be, that I would have a much more difficult time doing the work that we do, just because the community is so open and so eager to collaborate and to work together. I think during the last 6 months, there's been a couple of different quotes that have really resonated with me. Kendrick Sampson said in an interview that there is no revolution without art. Nina Simone has this really amazing quote that says something to the effect that it's the role of the artist to reflect the times. And I have that's been permeating my soul. And as I kind of work through and chew through, again, on a very personal experience, what this moment is, but also in a professional sense, like, okay, what is our role? What is my role? Those two quotes have really resonated with me. And I have seen numerous artists in our community respond in different ways to those couple of quotes. And and I would just also even say the larger kind of Black Lives Matter movement, there's been some really interesting conversations of how that is marketed, for lack of a better description, and branded, and how that message gets out. And oftentimes it's through art. The visual representations of Ahmaud Arbery or Breonna Taylor or George Floyd that get shared around in that conversation, and it's art driven. Yes, to answer your question, I'm really excited about how our local creative community has responded in this moment. I think you and I started a conversation a few months ago around the Black Lives Matter mural. The place, and I think that is a good example of artists responding in this moment in a really beautiful way. But also collectively, that group is still talking about, now that we've completed that project, at least in its early iteration, How can we continue to flex our power, for lack of a better description? How can we keep this momentum going to continue to affect change in our community? So that's the fact, that, and that's just one example of many that I've witnessed. And so I think a very long-winded to, you know, answer to your question is yes. I think that that is happening acutely and impactfully in our creative community at the moment.
Yeah, and that's it is important, and it's been very inspiring. I'm glad you brought up the Black Lives Matter mural that was defaced and things like that. I did want to talk to you about that. First, before we get into kind of what happened, why don't you tell us about how that came about? How did that that mural kind of, what was the impetus of that?
Yeah, so a couple of private business owners, Jeff Oswalt, he is the president of a creative firm here in town called 14-4, and then their sister company, 7-2, who's owned by Nick Murdo and Tyler Lafferty, they just decided that they wanted a Black Lives Matter mural on their building, but they obviously didn't have the experience, the expertise, or the connection with the creative community to make that happen. So they reached out to me, and we had a really candid conversation of some of the things that I wanted to see happen if I was going to participate. Not only, from an organizational, perspective and representative of Terrain, but as a Black woman living here in Japan. And to their credit, they were incredibly open and eager and wanted, the artists and myself to lead what came up, and kind of just like took a back burner. They said, this is our palette that we have in the community, and the kind of, you take it from here. And so, one of many things that we discussed is that absolutely had to be Black artists and Indigenous and people of artists of color. So what I started to do is I looked at those 16 letters and I thought, I spent hours thinking of, okay, how can we get artists from as many different sectors of the creative community as possible? What artists have the capability to do a large-scale mural of this scale? Looking at different mediums that and the different kind of diversity within art forms of our local creative scene, and starting to kind of, place people to get as wide a swath as I possibly could in terms of representation. With, again, wanting to have as many Black artists specifically as I could.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, again, to fill out the team, the roster, with other Indigenous people of color artists. And so that's really how it kind of evolved and into what it was. And then once the artists were on board, we had a couple of meetings. We wanted it to feel as cohesive and as synergistic as possible. So while each individual artist was given total flexibility and freedom to do whatever they wanted for their letter, we also wanted, again, for this to be a collaborative, collective statement. So had a couple of kind of pre-meetings of what that might look like, and then just kind of let the artists do whatever they wanted. We didn't want to tamper down their voice at all, and to be able to express themselves in whatever way they wish to. And to be quite honest, I'm a little bit of a control freak perfectionist. So in order to just kind of let everything go and happen as naturally as possible was an exercise for me. But also really cathartic in the fact that even though I didn't have a letter in that, and facilitating this process was also really important for my own healing as well. And given the fact that there was pretty much no parameters given, it was so incredible to witness just the beauty of the letters themselves and how you see reoccurring themes and reoccurring patterns and colors, you know, and appear within the mural itself. But even more so, sitting back and witnessing the artists come together in a way that was so supportive of one another that, you know, pretty much everyone came down almost daily to check in on whoever was doing their letter at that particular time, or said, hey, if you need help with this, or if you need someone to spot you or to help paint or whatever it happened to be, was really, really just quite magical and incredible to witness. And I think that's why it's that emotional connection that they all had. I think that's why they still have momentum moving forward in terms of there's conversations of, okay, what's the next project? How can we continue to collaborate? Yeah. How can we continue to flex our power? And so, there was, that's how it came to be. I would say that there was a lot of intent and thought and a lot of hard work put into it, but what it became was, without sounding too woo-woo, like a spiritual emotional thing that I couldn't have predicted, and I felt like it's pretty beautiful.
Yeah, it came together. The mural itself is amazing. It's a beautiful piece in general, but a great kind of piece, especially for downtown Spokane. I encourage anyone to go down and look at it if they're within the area of where it's recorded in Spokane, Washington. And I'm glad it happened. I know a lot of the artists who were involved, and the whole thing is beautiful. For those of you listeners who don't know, the mural was soon defaced after it was put up, which sadly I don't think anyone didn't see coming. But before we get to that aspect of the story, I want to ask about your experience with pushback about this mural in Spokane, because I know there was some. I certainly saw online some pushback regarding this, and they're the 7-2's choice to put this on their building and things like that. What was that like?
It wasn't kind of what you just said. It wasn't unexpected. I being a super transparent person, have never been more angry than I have been as a Black woman in this community or country after the murder of George Floyd.
Right.
And really, quite honestly, was getting a little nervous. The only emotion that I had was anger. I wasn't sad. I wasn't.
Yeah.
And so I got to the point of just like, let's burn this motherfucker down.
I
don't
that.
Care. I don't care what you think. I still don't care what you think, yeah. You know? And the fact that there was so much pushback, against the mural is just more testament to why the mural needed to happen in the first place.
100%.
So yeah. You can kick, you can scream all you want. I did my best to just not read the comments, you know, on social media. And I think it's an important piece, and nothing was going to stop us from making it happen.
Yeah. And that's really important. It was very encouraging to me, cause I am a Mexican and grew up in South Central LA. I lived through the riots in the '80s or nineties. And you know, I lived through all that. I saw the height of the Rampart LAPD violence and things like that. It happened in my community. It happened to me. It happened to family members. So seeing people stand strong in a community like Spokane, which, you know, is obviously predominantly white, and traditionally conservative, but that's changing, was very encouraging to me. And I think it's something that I've seen, and you probably have too, you've seen people kind of change their tune a little bit in towards the positive direction, starting to understand and starting to realize why these things are necessary and why this matters. You mentioned George Floyd, and you know, people want to talk about, oh, well, this, well, you know, he was high on this or blah, 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 whatever, whatever, whatever. And people, you know, or all these cases, they always want to start poking holes in things. And I go, and what I think people don't understand is that these aren't single incidents that people are mad about. This is a collective that is built up and it's now overflowing so regularly and massively that there's no way to, it's like, this isn't this one isolated incident. This is a full tapestry that's been painted that we have to address, you know?
Yeah. It's 400 years, right. 400 years of systemic racism that we have to continually address. And I think that's also one of the things about the mural. Well, a couple of different things. One thing that was also super interesting is, so as the mural brought up, for people who aren't familiar with the process, the mural was painted in white letters first, each letter acting as a canvas that then the artist could go in and fill in any way that they wanted. And it was a pretty hostile environment when it was just all white letters. I mean, on a daily basis, you know, there were people who were driving by who said, you know, white power or fuck you niggers or, you know, just all this like, terrible stuff. And that continued to happen as the letters got filled in. But I will say this, that one of the most kind of hair-raising experiences that I continued to witness was that as people watched these artists and their just sheer talent and all the time and energy they put into their letter, it started to humanize the message that, you know, it started to humanize the message. And even though there was still incidences and it was defaced, the energy shifted and people, even if they had opposing views, and I should say overwhelmingly people have come and it's just been positive. People from the car, I mean, carloads of people. I talked to people from San Francisco and Chicago and Boise, and just overwhelmingly, it's been positive. But for those people who were challenged by this particular message, they were at least willing to, it almost, for lack of a better description, softened them a little bit because they saw an actual human being behind the message. And it's hard to deny someone's humanity when you're looking at them face to face. And so I think, you know, more than just letters on a wall or a phrase on the wall, what I am seeing happening still, you know, 2 months down the way is people spending an incredible time absorbing the message and being willing to have a conversation. And that is a really powerful, beautiful thing to witness.
Yeah. And I think that's really important is that, is the humanizing is really a big thing. And I think, part of in today's age and especially now during the pandemic and we're all kind of online and spun up about, everything. We have a lot of time to kind of get worked up and be online and maybe online a little too much. You gotta disconnect sometimes. You know, it's very easy to not view the people you're arguing with or yelling at or debating with online as human. It's just you type into your little box and throw it into the internet. And, you know, if you stop and actually put those two people in a room and force them to look at each other. And I'm like, to me, I give this example. The other day I was debating, having a sociopolitical debate with someone online that I don't really know. We ended up being Facebook friends, but like I get, you're probably the same. You're kind of a personality. You probably get at, you know, people you don't, you know, hundreds of Facebook friends, you have no idea who they are. So we're kind of debating this thing. And then as we talked, we realized there were some things that in the subject we kind of agreed on. We moved the conversation to private message and then decided to meet for coffee and just like humanize each other and talk about like, let me understand why you feel this way. You know, I'm going to tell you why I feel my way. And let's, you know, at the base level, we're all humans. We can at least start there. And, you know, the opportunity to build bridges rather than cause more division, I think, is really something we need right now. And hopefully things like this and it can make that happen more.
Yeah. And it's also, I love that. And I think that's a testament to who you are as a human being. And, you know, I saw, again, you reached out to me during the mural, and when it was defaced, and I saw that that character in you and through our conversation online. And I think that's something that you should be really, really proud of yourself for sure. It really, that aspect of who you are as a person shines through, even through a, you know, Facebook DM.
Oh, well, can you talk to my mom and tell her that someone should be proud of me? No, I
it's the truth.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's the truth. And it's also, you know, you had mentioned George Floyd and people kind of like picking apart his resume, for lack of a, you know, and Black people and people of color are the only people that we do that to, you know?
Right.
And
yeah, absolutely.
That's a whole nother episode. I don't need to go to But it's just like, you know, and again, that's just, I'm done.
These words have come out of my mouth so many times now in the last few months, more times than I care to admit, not care to admit, but care to talk about even. It's like, I just have to tell people, like, stop, just say what you mean. And it is that it doesn't affect you, so you don't care. Like that's kind of what it comes down to. I'm like, you know, do you have, why it doesn't matter what someone, as you said, resume is in that moment, what happened was wrong. Like that's you know, this isn't retroactive punitive punishment for something in the past. We're talking about absolutely deplorable actions in the moment. That's what we should be focused on. So I'm running for mayor of Spokane in 2023.
You are?
I am. Yes.
Yeah.
One of my main things is again, as I mentioned, growing up in LA and kind of the things I've experienced and seen, Spokane has the fifth deadliest police force in America, and we're the 100th largest city, which is disgusting to me. And I start talking about this and people either won't even admit to the statistics. They're like, no, that's not real. I'm like, well, it is. And then they think they try and pass it off as not a big deal. I'm like, when do we care? When we break the top three, when we're on the podium, is that not until we're number one? I'm like, at what point do we, this is the thing. If you keep letting it go and going crazy and getting worse and not correcting, then when do we actually step in and be like, we need to make a change?
Yeah, you absolutely. Know? And I think it goes back to, dare I say it, you know, bubbles and a privilege. And to your point of like, people don't care until it affects them directly.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to pass off. It's easy to ignore. It's easy to, or this particular person is prompting up my own personal agenda in a different way. So I'm going to ignore that we're going to fifth, you know, deadliest, you know, police in the country, even though we're the 100th largest city. I don't know how to fix that other than having really good people run for office. So I'm stoked to hear your plans for 2023.
Thank you. I'm going to try. I'm giving it my all. I want, I believe in Spokane. I want it to be a better place. I had someone ask me, I was doing an interview the other day, and they asked me like, so you like, you do comedy, this and that, like, and you're running for mayor. Like, do you want to be mayor? Like, you want to be mayor of Spokane? I'm like, no. I don't want to be mayor of Spokane. I go, that sounds like a horribly boring job. I go, but if that's the best way to affect change in this city during the 4 years I would be in office and potentially beyond, then yes, I'm absolutely willing to do that job. You know, I mean, yeah. I don't want to wake up and go to city. No, I know that sounds terrible. Yeah, yeah. But you know, if that makes a difference, then yeah, let's do it.
Yep. And I love that recognition in you. One of the things that I'm learning more and more is that there are many different ways to disrupt and to affect change. And some of that can be from outside the system. Some of that needs to be inside the system.
Yeah.
Some of that needs to be different leadership styles within the system and just different leadership styles within outside the system. And it takes all of the above in order to affect change. And so I do not have the skin for politics, but I'm glad that other people do. And we, again, we need all of those different pathways if we're actually going to affect change. And just like you, I'm really hopeful that Spokane is moving in the right direction, and we just need more people to push it that way.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Ginger, I know you have to go, so I don't want to keep you. I don't want to make you late. But please, if you would, tell us where people can find you or Terrain, where they want to follow, what they need to support. If you'd shout all those things out so we can make sure people know where to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is terrainspokane.com. And then we are on Facebook and Instagram quite a bit under Terrain Spokane, our handles on Facebook and Instagram. If you're interested in getting involved, the best way is to sign up for our newsletter. That's where we like place all of our calls and let people know what's going on. And then we're serious that we love to collaborate. That's what our organization has been built on. So if you have ideas that you think might be a potential opportunity for Terrain to collaborate on, always, you know, shoot us an email, pitch us your ideas. We're always open to that. So yeah, again, terrainspokane.com, and then Facebook and Instagram. I don't do the Twitter. We have a Twitter handle, but we don't do it that often. Facebook, Instagram, and our website are the best ways to engage.
Okay, great. Well, everyone make sure and go follow, check them out, support. Now more than ever, artists and need your support. Everyone needs your support. So go out there and, you know, make it a point to not buy a coffee for 4 days and support some local art somehow or something. You know, I mean, there's little things you can do, and it makes a big difference for them. And little art in your life is good.
So. Absolutely. If you hang out with me long enough, you'll hear me say this ad nauseum. But you know, when we're thinking of our community, we need to feed people's bellies, but we also need to feed their hearts and their souls. And our artists and our creatives and our community are a vehicle to do that. And so, yeah, please, 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 please don't forget, when you're thinking about supporting people in our community, our artists need you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, go check them out. Be sure and follow, as I said. Keep an update. Sign up for the newsletter so you can get updates on everything coming and when Terrain does come back with some live events, which hopefully will be sooner than later. But there's stuff online, virtual things for now also, which you shouldn't miss. So,
Deese, you're awesome. Thank you so much for all of the wonderful work that you're doing in our community and making sure that, you know, different people, giving people a platform for their voice to be heard, and all the good work that you're doing. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to chat with you. And so thank you for all the good work.
Well, I greatly appreciate it. That means a lot coming from you. And I'm glad we finally got to speak in person.
Yeah, kind of.
So, all right. Well, Ginger, I appreciate being here, and everyone for the Social Hour. I am Decent for Ginger Ewing. We appreciate it. Thanks. And we will see you next week.